City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Queercast show number 391. I'm Amy Matheny flying solo on a show about a show about a show. It's a little case of All About Eve or All About Amy, but not really. I am featuring this show today about a project that I'm working on called Float. It is the first show in the season for About Face Theater, and it is written by lesbian playwright Patricia Kame, who is a friend of mine. And many of you may know Pulp, which was her play about lesbian pulp fiction that was a big hit here about 4 or 5 years ago on Chicago stages. Very sexy, very fun, campy. And Float is a very different show for Pat, but such amazing work and excellent writing, and I'm thrilled to be a part of it. So I have been burning the candle at both ends the past few weeks working on this production, and I'm glad to have Patricia Kane, my friend Pat, here on the show today to talk about being a gay voice in the world of theater, a lesbian voice, about playwriting in general, and about this world of Float that we hope that you will come and experience and see. Also, we have a lot of news. Last week was a big election week. Not only was it Halloween, but also the big midterm elections, and a lot of things changed, folks. And I just got to say, we got to keep beating our drum because we take 2 steps forward and 3 steps back sometimes, it feels. There are some exciting new people who won office, and many stories that maybe you didn't even hear about that we want to keep our eye on, and that those anti-gay groups really came out and definitely beat their drum and stumped and thumped to make sure that some change occurred. Thus, the 3 steps back. So there's a lot of news. Also, an exciting movie, James Franco, who has been such a friend of the GLBT community. He is starring in a film that many have compared to what Tom Hanks did with Castaway, a film essentially about a true story about a hiker caught between a rock and a hard place. The movie is called 127 Hours, and Richard Knight Jr. is bringing us our review, plus what else is going on in theater and the world of entertainment. So it's a big show, and I'm very happy that you're all with me here in this crisp first week of November. Falls upon us, and Thanksgivings are soon to come.
Hi, I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
Yeah, and I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
I just created a revolutionary aluminum pint bottle. Great new way to enjoy the taste of Miller Lite.
Wow. See, I just designed a new game day delicacy to be enjoyed with your great-tasting beer, the 8-layer dip.
Well, the aluminum pint has a wider mouth, giving every sip a superior flow that delivers the great taste.
That's terrific. Most people flow from beef to bean to sour cream to cheese to guacamole to salsa to veggies. See, I'm not most people, though. I flow all the way to jambalaya.
Also, it's got a resealable cap that makes sure every sip tastes as fresh as the first.
Well, my dip is so hearty, it can last from a day game to a night game.
This isn't a competition, you know.
Okay, fine. You advance the science of drinking great-tasting beer, and I advance the art of enjoying it.
Introducing the new aluminum pint bottle from Miller Lite. Just another way for you to enjoy the great taste. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
The presidential midterm elections took place on November 2nd, and they resulted in a shift in the political landscape as the Republican Party took over the U.S. House, even though Democrats held on to the U.S. Senate. Among Congress people who retained their seats were Barney Frank of Massachusetts, Tammy Baldwin, Wisconsin, Jared Polis of Colorado, all of whom are openly gay. In Illinois, Republican Mark Kirk won the U.S. seat formerly occupied by President Barack Obama.
In a stunning development, three of the Iowa Supreme Court judges who unanimously ruled for marriage equality in the state have been voted off the bench, thanks to a well-funded anti-gay campaign. Approximately 54% of the state's residents voted not to retain Supreme Court Chief Justice Marsha Ternus and Associate Justices Michael J. Streit and David L. Baker. Of the 74 judges on the ballot, only these three came close to being removed. Several national anti-gay groups, including the Family Research Council and the National Organization for Marriage, were part of a $1 million campaign that called for the removal of these three Supreme Court justices.
Lexington, Kentucky has elected its first openly gay mayor. Jim Gray, a businessman who has been the city's vice mayor, defeated incumbent Jim Newberry in a nonpartisan election.
In California, Victoria Kolakowski has won a seat on Alameda County Superior Court bench, becoming the first transgender trial judge in the country. Kolakowski defeated Deputy District Attorney John Creighton, who has more than 25 years of legal experience and had the support of 80% of the county's judges.
Constance McMillan, the Mississippi teen whose high school prom was initially canceled when she wanted to bring her girlfriend as her date and wear a tuxedo, has been named one of Glamour magazine's 2010 Women of the Year. Other women honored are singer Fergie, fashion designer Donatella Versace, Queen Rania of Jordan, and actress Julia Roberts. Cher is receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award.
In Chicago, Howard Brown Health Center has launched a public appeal for Lifeline support, needing to raise $500,000 in 50 days in order to sustain its health and wellness services and to keep operating. An audit revealed a deep financial deficit, the result of previous mismanagement of grant funds. The deficit threatens Howard Brown and its programs that serve 36,000 LGBT youth, adults, and seniors annually.
In Vermont, the state Supreme Court has unanimously granted custody to Vermont resident Janet Jenkins in the fight with Lisa Miller. The ruling affirms a 2009 court order that gave her sole custody of Isabella Miller Jenkins, although the child is still missing along with Miller.
Jim Swilly, the pastor of Church in the Now, the Georgia institution he founded a quarter century ago, has officially come out of the closet. He said that he made the decision to announce his sexual orientation in order to save lives.
In Washington, D.C., transgender man Kyle Alums wants to be identified as a male, even though he is on George Washington University's women's basketball team. Alums said that the school has been supportive during this transition, adding that he decided to transition, that is, change my name and pronouns, because it bothered me to hide who I am, and I'm trying to help myself and others be who they are.
In Philadelphia, police have arrested transgender prostitute Herman Burton in connection with the death of Patrick Brady, whose body was found after a fire at a posh hotel. Authorities said that Brady had been beaten, robbed, and strangled. Philadelphia homicide Captain James Clark said that the room was intentionally set on fire to cover up the crime.
In Michigan, Assistant Attorney General Andrew Shervell had a disciplinary hearing related to his harassment of the University of Michigan student body president, who happens to be gay. Shervell, age 30, had been on leave after his blog accused student Chris Armstrong of promoting a radical homosexual agenda caused a firestorm of controversy. Armstrong had sought a protection order. Moreover, the school banned Shervell from being on its campus because he had videotaped Armstrong at home and at school.
In world news, in Britain, transgender woman Mickey Nicholson has won the National Scrabble Championship.
Nicholson, 32, who had only started playing the game 5 years ago on the internet, edged Mark Nyman, who has won more than 20 major tournaments. Nicholson will now compete in the Causeway Scrabble Challenge in Malaysia in December.
In England, lesbian church pastor, the Reverend Sharon Ferguson, has revealed that she has received hostile emails after she started publicly fighting a ban on same-sex marriage. Ferguson, age 52, and partner Franca Streitzel, age 49, decided to take their case to court after being refused a civil license. Despite the emails, Ferguson said that overall, public opinion is on her side and that she has a very strong legal case.
In entertainment news, in the December issue of Vanity Fair, superstar Cher talks about her struggle with son Chaz Bono, saying at one point, "I still don't remember to call her him." Cher also says, "If I woke up tomorrow in a guy's body, I would just kick and scream and cry and fucking rob a bank because I cannot see myself as anything but who I am, a girl. I would not take it as well as Chaz has." The gay icon also discusses her late ex, Sonny Bono, and being in the spotlight.
On Oprah, Portia de Rossi said that the pressures to stay in the closet caused her to become anorexic. At one point, de Rossi was down to 82 pounds, but she thought she was doing what was necessary to be an actress. She added that Ellen's love has saved her. De Rossi has a new memoir. It's The Unbearable Lightness.
The University of South Carolina at Columbia is offering a course called Lady Gaga and the Sociology of Fame. The upper-level course will look at everything from Gaga's life to modern gay culture. On a related note, the University of Virginia offered an English course, Sex, Gender, and Identity, that used Gaga as a framework for critical analysis. And in other Gaga-related news, she has again made history, this time as the first person to have wax figures of her launched in all of Madame Tussauds museums simultaneously.
Israel has become the first country to have a same-sex duo on its version of the hit TV show Dancing with the Stars. Lesbian TV sportscaster Gili Shem Tov and heterosexual professional dancer Dorit Milman are one team on the show. Milman said, "The leader and the follower, we change all the time. One time I lead her and one time she leads me." Shem Tov added, "I live with my girlfriend and we are raising our one-year-old son together. It felt natural for me to dance with a woman." Out former boy band member Lance Bass competed in the U.S. version a few years ago, but he had a female partner.
The hit TV show Glee is also being criticized for using the word tranny in its recent Rocky Horror-themed episode. The show, which has been praised for its approach to LGBT-related issues, had actor Harry Shum Jr., who plays Mike Chang, as Frankenfurter. Chang's parents, however, did not want him to take the role because they thought he looked like a tranny.
In talking about his character on the show 90210, the womanizer Teddy realizing he was gay, actor Trevor Donovan said, "I had no idea that it was going to happen." However, he added, "Over the hiatus, the producers and writers told me the direction it was going in. None of us wanted it to be a flash in the pan or shock value for ratings. We wanted to tell realistic stories. This kid battling and coming to terms with who he was and how painful and difficult it is." Donovan also said there are no risque love scenes planned for Teddy and boyfriend Ian yet.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr. and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. Without a compelling screen presence and some mighty inventive script solutions, the stunning true story of Aaron Ralston, a hiker who found himself stuck literally between a rock and a hard place in the Utah outback for over 5 days, would be a very long haul indeed for a movie. But in the hands of Slumdog Millionaire's Danny Boyle, who directs and co-wrote the script, and James "I'm Not Gay, I Just Like Playing Gay Characters" Franco, 127 Hours is a genuinely enthralling cinematic experience. Boyle's creative solutions would be for naught without Franco, who continues the creative winning streak he began earlier this year in the artsy Howl. With Franco, Boyle's got just the right combination of actor and personality for the tricky role. A quote-unquote regular guy who must somehow mesmerize an audience while pinned beneath a boulder for more than the majority of the film. With his high-wattage, confident smile, smoky eyes, take-charge attitude, and irresistible vulnerability when he realizes his foolishness, Franco makes Aaron, who is straight, most importantly, someone whose fate we care about. That's the small but very real triumph of 127 hours. We know the beginning and the end of the story going in, and yes, be prepared for some gore when Aaron makes his quote-unquote big decision. But working in tandem, a wonderfully inventive writer, director, and a star have interested us in what happened in between. I'm Richard Knight Jr., who still has trouble talking, and that's your Not at the Movies Minute.
Hi, this is Katie Lang. You're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of November 8th, 2010, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Four guys, one girl, one wild vacation. It's Departure Lounge, bailiwick Chicago's new musical direct from London about four guys caught between adolescence and adulthood. Departure Lounge is playing now through December 12th at the Royal George Cabaret Theater at Halsted and North Avenue. Tickets are available at the box office or through Ticketmaster.
Don't miss River North Chicago Dance Company at the Harris Theater in Millennium Park for a one-night-only engagement Saturday, November 13th. The performance features a stunning world premiere by contemporary choreographer Sidra Bell, along with many other celebrated works. For tickets, visit harristheaterchicago.org.
About Face Theater presents Float, a new play by Patricia Kane, directed by Leslie Buxbaum Danzig. From the creator of Pulp, this heartwarming holiday play stars Adrian Curry, Rangin Alte, Wendy Roby, Peggy Roeder, and our very own Amy Matheny. At Theater Wit, playing now through December 12th, visit aboutfacetheater.com for tickets or call the Theater Wit box office. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead, you're not alone. Post a comment.
There's a time in our lives we start again on writing our part. As the story goes on, it's the rule that we remember our line. I know everyone would want me to say that I'm not afraid to be alone. I'm gonna live, I'm alright. I'm gonna die, it's alright, I'm okay. La-da-da, I'm gonna live, I'm alright. I'm gonna die, it's alright, I'm okay.
Playwright Patricia Kane delighted audiences in Chicago with her play Pulp, based on lesbian pulp novels. The show combined smart humor, sassy sex appeal, and intriguing musical numbers. It was a huge hit for About Face Theater, was revived here in the city a few years after its premiere, and has enjoyed productions from coast to coast. Her highly anticipated new endeavor is Float, a play set in small town Illinois, which focuses on a group of women building a float for their annual holiday parade. But if you know Pat Kane, there's just so much more to it than that. Hey, Pat, it's good to have you on the show.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Now, I think I should say full disclosure that I'm in this show. So, guys listening, you all know that I've been talking about coming to see me and Mitchell over at Theater Wit during the holiday season and enjoying a little Santaland Diaries and a little Float. And you know that I've been hard at work. So this is the project I've been hard at work on. And Pat is a dear friend that I've known for many years. But I don't get to interview you very often because you've left us waiting for a while for a new piece. So I'm sure audiences are excited. Do you hear people saying it's about time?
A little bit. I have been keeping busy in the interim, but
absolutely.
This is the first full length play that I've done since Pulp.
Right.
So it's very exciting.
Well, let's just say, first and foremost, your life in the theater has been as an actress for many, many, many years. And then you decided to, or how did you start writing? I mean, how did that come about for you?
Well, Amy, I started to become a woman of a certain age. And there aren't as many roles for us. And especially when you're a tall gal, it's even harder to get cast. And so I started, and I had been encouraged by teachers and other folks who had read some of my just like schoolwork writing and that kind of stuff, knew that I could put two sentences together. They had encouraged me to try to take a shot at playwriting.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, one of my teachers, Joanna McClay, who has done a lot of adapting of novels and things like that, she really encouraged me to try my hand at it. So I started looking for novels, short stories and things like that, where there might be a role for a 30-something tall lesbian, and by God, I found it in Carol Anshaw's novel, Seven Moves. So once I found that, that's what really inspired me to start adapting. And then once I got working on that piece, the further I got into it, the more I was doing writing of it. And the artistic director at About Face at the time, Eric Rosen, who was also a terrific playwright and friend, at one of our talkbacks at Seven Moves, he said, you know, I think part of my favorite parts of the play are the parts that Pat wrote just herself.
Hmm.
And that kind of stuck in the back of my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I had seen this book at Unabridged Bookstore of all these pulp novel covers. And I thought they were gorgeous and fun and sexy and all that kind of stuff. And I started mulling over while I was working on Seven Moves about trying to create pulp. Hmm. And so, you know, there it is. So I just gave a shot at that, and it worked out nicely. And so everybody's been encouraging me to write everything. So overall, you know, in the span of my career, it's a fairly recent event. Seven Moves, we did that production in 2002.
Right.
So, you know, it hasn't been a huge amount of time that I've been writing. But,
well, and Carol Anshaw's...
But the writing process is speeding up.
Yes. Well, Carol Anshaw's, I mean, a huge, an author and Chicago, mm-hmm. Chicagoan. So was it daunting to approach her or to try to
Absolutely.
Adapt her work?
Yes.
As a lesbian novelist and wanting to be, at the time, I guess, a would-be lesbian playwright?
Yeah. Yeah, and especially me coming to her having no track record as mm-hmm. a playwright. So she really took a leap of faith, and I can never express my appreciation enough for her doing that, because
right.
that experience opened me up to a whole other venue in my life,
yeah.
and which has proved to be quite lovely and fruitful.
Now, you said that you got this idea of being in a bookstore and seeing some covers of the lesbian pulp novels. Did you do a lot of research around pulp before you actually put your own pen to paper to craft your own story? Or how did you find the tone and the feel and kind of the story you wanted to tell with that play?
I have to tell you, doing the research for that play was one of the most fun and fascinating and exciting things one could do. I got to read it was work, right?
Yep.
Work in quotation marks, but I got to read all of these great pulp novels. I got to watch all of these movies from the 30s and 40s. I watched Barbara Stanwyck was a big theme in the play, so I got to watch all these great Barbara Stanwyck movies, and she's
mm-hmm.
fantastic. Any of you folks out there who don't have an appreciation for her, watch her stuff. She's much more than just Big Ballet.
Yes.
And so, no, it was a blast, and I did a ton of research for that one.
So how long has it taken you? Does each play take you about the same amount of time to write? Do you research or think about character or theme? And what is your process around writing? Or has it been different for each of these plays we've even talked about?
One of the most important things for me in playwriting, the playwriting process, is to have a deadline.
Hmm.
And so, so that's really been key. Michael Halberstam at Writers Theater has also been a great supporter of mine, and Michael commissioned me to write a one-act piece, and I had a very short deadline for that I kind of whipped out, and recently he also commissioned me to do another piece, which I also kind of, it felt like I whipped out, but it had a lot of research around it as well. Float has been an interesting experience because it's had a long time to marinate, longer than any of the other pieces so far, truly, I think. Pulp kind of marinated a long time, but then when I wrote it, it came out very quickly. Float did not come out quickly, and it had a bit of a marination time, too.
What was your inspiration for Float? I mean, you said Pulp was kind of walking past these novels. Carol Ann Shaw Seven Moves was kind of looking for, that was a time when you were actually going to be actor/writer because you were looking for something that, you know, would kind of be a piece for you to, you know, push up your sleeves and get into. So what was the inspiration for Float?
You know what? If you put a gun to my head, I can't really tell you. I like to take hot baths. And one night I was just in the tub and I thought, wouldn't it be kind of fun to build a float on stage? And it just kind of took off from there. My partner tells me that years ago I had talked about starting to play the way that Float starts. But I didn't remember that. But obviously it got stuck in the recesses of my mind somewhere. But I really don't know where it truly, truly came from. I personally have virtually zero experience float building.
I was going to ask, have you ever built a float, or is this a part of your childhood
or your
family?
It is not a part of my childhood. It is so not a part of my childhood. I remember once my sister was in charge of like building the float for her senior class or something like that. I don't even know if that's correct or not, but something with her class that I had a marginal help with. You know, I remember tissue paper and that was about it. But seriously, zero experience with it.
Yeah.
But I come from Central Illinois, and there's still a huge part of me that is there. And even though I've lived in the city for, you know, decades. So I think in the same way that Pulp, I wanted it to be an homage to this genre that I just loved. And I wanted other people to experience it and relish it and have fun with it and enjoy it as much as I did. I feel the same way about Float. I love the hometown that I'm from, and this is the Float is not based on any particular events, not on any particular people, anything like that. But there's enough of my childhood, not childhood, but my hometown infused in the play that for me, it's a piece where I get to enjoy these people again, even though I don't live there anymore. And it's very important to me that this is in no way a parody, that it's in no way making fun of people. It's enjoying people and really seeing what their journey is, as I have seen several small town folks, myself included, take a journey from being rather closed-minded to opening it up and finding the world.
Well, and I guess the, you know, you created a certain world with Pulp with five women, and you're creating a different world here with Float with also with five women. There are men are referred to but never appear on the stage. Is five a magic number, or you just like hanging out with five gals in the playwriting world?
It's worked out nicely so far.
Yeah. Tell us.
You know, it kind of shook out that way.
Yeah.
And it's not anything big and intentional, but you know, quite frankly, I have not written a role for a man yet. The only role I've ever written for a man was in this holiday one act that I did that Amy Matheny also starred in.
Yeah.
That had a guy on stage, but he never spoke a single word. But
right.
He was wonderful.
Yeah. You wrote that brilliantly, by the way. Brilliantly you wrote that male character, let me tell you.
So, you know, maybe the next play I'll have a guy in it.
Yeah.
But I think I've been trying to stick with the familiar at this point in time.
Yeah. So talk to me about... you know, if people come up to you and say, you know, oh, you've written a play, Float, what's it about? I mean, how are you describing the play these days? Because it's about to open here on going into previews November 11th, and it'll be running through December 12th. So people, I'm sure, are coming up to you and saying, what's your play about? So what do you say when people ask you that?
Well, I tell them that it's a dramatic comedy. It's more of a comedy, but it has some drama in it, about a group of Midwestern women who are friends who are building a float for the holiday parade. And it's about what happens when the anchors in their lives are shaken.
Hmm. And so there is no. That's good. I like it. And thus they're afloat. So tell me who some of these women are. If you can just kind of briefly give us who the five portrayals are in the play.
Sure. The main character is named Duty. I had an aunt, Duty, who I really loved, and so this is in homage to her, but absolutely nothing at all like what she was like. I just like the name.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being played brilliantly by Wendy Roby, who is an amazing actress here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And
television
is,
fans know her from Twin Peaks, perhaps.
Yes, and also she was in the movie...
Were the World Mine?
Were the World Mine?
Yes, that was filmed here. It was originally called Fairies, and then Were the World Mine?
Right.
The cute, gay indie darling.
Yeah. So Duty is kind of the leader of this group. This group is the Budapest Women's Club, based in a small town called Budapest, and Duty is a kind, sweet woman, but also a rigid woman, and who has volunteered her home to build this float, and she is definitely in charge and leading the pack, and she has a very close relationship with a younger woman by the name of Luce, who is portrayed by the lovely Amy Matheny.
Who?
And, and they have lived in this town almost all of their lives, and Duty took Luce under her wing when Luce was at a very young age, because Luce had a very rough childhood. And so a lot of the story is based around the changes that occur between Duty and Luce's relationship, because another woman has moved into this town by the name of Marty, who is also interested in Luce, but in a different way than Duty is, and who is experiencing her life in a new way, just moved to the small town, and is trying to experience everything that she can, and trying to open herself and Luce up to all of the options that they can possibly find.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are also two other characters, the character of Char, who's the realtor in town, who is also a bit of a sexpot, kind of.
She's a saucy girl.
She's a saucy girl who has a bad rep, but we don't know how much of that is true, who is played by Rengen Alte, also another terrific actress. The role of Marty, I should say, is being played by Adrienne Curry, another terrific gal. And the final character in the piece is Arletta, who is a character who has quite a strong opinion about how everything should be, and a former cheerleader, and is played with zest and great heart and great humor by the fantastic Peggy Roeder.
And really, you know, I think what's unique about your play, and you know, it's funny that you said when you wrote Seven Moves, you were looking to write plays for women in their 30s, and now really... I mean, the youngest character in this play is in her late 30s or 30s, mid to late 30s, mm-hmm. and everybody else goes up in age. So you're really writing roles for mature women, I guess I can say that,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's always totally one of my goals, yeah.
Yeah.
Pulp was the same way. Seven Moves was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And Chords, actually, that I wrote was the same way as well.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think? I mean, obviously, what role has sexuality, your own sexuality, and exploring sexuality meant for you in your work? How imperative is that as something that you want to contribute to the world of theater as a new voice?
Well, it's an important one, and it's one that is voiced in the majority of my plays so far in one form or another. In fact, I would argue that in some form or another, it's voiced in all of them. I feel like there is a there's a hole in theater where lesbian life should be. I just feel like there isn't enough good stuff out there. And I know for myself, in terms of theater, movies, books, all that kind of stuff, I thirst for stories about our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like if I'm feeling that way, there are other people out there as well. But I also want to say that, yes, there are lesbian themes in my shows, but I also think that my shows are very accessible, mm-hmm. not only to gay guys. Gay guys loved pulp.
Yeah, I was about to say.
And actually, we did a reading of Float last fall as part of the XYZ Festival. We had a lot of gay guys who showed up. We had a lot of straight folks who showed up, and they all seem to really enjoy it. So please do not think that this is, quote unquote, a lesbian play. It isn't.
Yeah.
But I do think it is important for us to get our stories out there as much as we can. And good stories, you mm-hmm. know, in different kinds of stories. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important to me.
Well, and it's interesting because we don't want to give away too much about the play. We want people to come and see it. And it's, believe you me, it's definitely nothing against Christmas Carol or Nutcracker, but it's a different kind of holiday show. And at the same time, it's a show you could bring your mom to. I mean,
yeah.
there is. I mean, it is. It has smart language, but it doesn't need to use foul language. And at the same time, it explores sexuality without being something that you wouldn't be you couldn't feel like would be a family holiday show. It is I think that's what's the charm about this play. And the people that you said who saw it earlier, why so many people can connect to it, because it really is about small town and family and redefining family and friendship. And, you know, we can be friends with people who are very different than us and, mm-hmm. yeah. and where those,
and how we open our minds to them, you
mm-hmm.
know, that's
mm-hmm.
where the story took me.
Yeah.
That wasn't what I originally intended to write about, but that's where we went.
Yeah, how we challenge each other to grow and find compassion uh-huh. for each other's differences and struggles, you know, is really what I think is the universality of Float, as I see it from the inside, because I am on the inside, but, you know, that's what I can say as an insider. So you're working with, I mean, just a... Wow, like such a team on this. We should say this is About Face Theater is presenting Float, Patricia Kane's Float, which will be their first show this season, November 11th through December 12th at Theater Wit. That's the old bailiwick. So there's some good juju there, and also a whole new facelift with Theater Wit at 1229 West Belmont. It's accessible to public transportation, the Red Line, buses, and everything right there on Belmont. And there's information at aboutfacetheater.com. But you are working with just some amazing, this production has just attracted some amazing production team talent from director Leslie Danzig from 500 Clowns. I mean, that is such a unique collaboration, having Leslie on this production. And what has that called for you?
It's been fantastic. In my prior shows, I worked with Jessica Thebus, who happens to be very good friends with Leslie Danzig. And Jessica has also been involved with this show as well. She directed the workshop production and has certainly helped with us getting the script in fighting shape. And she'll have her hand in it a little bit more when she comes back from directing another show. But Leslie has been fantastic. She has just wonderful insights, not only into how to create this very physical world. This, you know, we are building a float on stage and taking it down every night of the week. So, I mean, that in itself is crazy. Come see it for that.
Yeah.
So Leslie brings all this great theatricality to it from her work with 500 Clowns, which is one of my favorite theater troupes here in town. They just do amazing work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very exciting for me to work with Leslie. And she's so smart, and she is really honing the play in a beautiful, delicate yet fun way. And she's been terrific. We have such a stellar cast with this group that she's been really great in letting them have free rein and really to explore the play while they're trying to learn how to build this float. And all the while still keeping the nervous playwright calm and secure.
She has your Xanax and your Valium right next to your fresh glass of water is what you're saying during the rehearsal process.
I do.
We have let some guys play with us a little bit as well. I mean, your design team does have some gents in it. And I know it was pretty much a huge coup. The genius designer who is helping us build this float.
Yes. John Musial.
Yeah.
Who has done a lot of work with Looking Glass and with 500 Clowns.
Mm-hmm.
And John has done... he specializes in kind of sets that you can just kind of climb all over. And he's gone to town with this one and given us one heck of a float. So it's going to be, we actually move into the theater space tomorrow. So it'll be exciting to see the full Megillah. We've been in the rehearsal room at About Face for the last couple of weeks and working on a float that's built out of platforms that they've created for us. So it's going to be really fun tomorrow to actually get in there and on it. And
exactly. Play. Come to watch me screw. And don't take your minds there. I've got the screw gun. That's all I'm trying to say. What's next, Pat? I mean, are you always mulling around your next project? You have this project for Writers Theater or for Michael Halberstam that you've mentioned.
Yep.
Are you already... stewing and marinating on your next project, or are you just really in the land of Floatland right now?
I'm kind of in Floatland right now with my gin bottle. And and next up is... No, actually, it's going very, very well. I have rarely hit the gin so far. And then the next step is getting the Writers' Theater piece in Fighting Shape itself, which will happen right after the first of the year. And then we'll see. I do have a couple of things that are brewing in the back, and I guess I just have to go back to the bathtub and see what really pops up.
Well, we hope that you do and write more lesbian characters and explore our stories. And we're really glad that you've added your voice to the world of theater and added our voice and help us identify and actually in the roles and the women that we see on stage. So we appreciate that. About Face Theater presents Patricia Kane's Float. It's a holiday show. Bring your friends, bring your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your gaggle of friends, your family. November 11th through December 12th at Theater Wit, 1229 West Belmont. That's the old Bailiwick space. It's only $25 for tickets, $15 for students, and I believe there are special rates the first week of previews. If you'd like to get all information on the show, purchase tickets, or have any questions, visit aboutfacetheater.com and click on all the information for Float. And you can buy your tickets right there, or you can call the Theater Wit box office. Pat Kane, we'll see you at the theater.
Thank you, my dear. See you. Bye.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, I hope you'll come out and see Float. It would be great to have you be in the audience. I know that the Windy City Times Theater Series group is coming, and many, many others. Many of you have told me, emailed me, or Facebooked me that you're planning to attend, and I think you will be pleasantly. You'll have a very pleasant and fun and moving evening. And also, you can double feature because our very own Mitchell Fain about to open the Santaland Diaries right next door in the same building at Theater Wit. So come hang out with me and Mitchell on Belmont. And in next week's show, I'll be talking with Deb Pierce. She also has some big new projects for our neighbors in the northern Canadian regions. She has a new show on television in Toronto, and we're going to be talking to Deb about how much traveling she's been doing and what's been going on in her life. Plus, a very cool interview about a new show coming to Sundance about girls who like boys who like boys. That's coming up, too. Hope you all have a great week, and we'll talk again soon. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.